Hello, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency, devoted to promoting musicians and authors worldwide. Call us today at 941-877-1552 to start your free publicity evaluation. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Please welcome the host of Interviewing the Legends, music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello once again, everyone. I'm your host, Ray Shasho. Welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends on BBS Radio, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or email us at publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. And by the Rockstar Chronicles Series 1, my new book, featuring over 45 intimate conversations with the greatest music legends the world will ever know. Available now at bookbaby.com. Larry McRae's heart and soul are in the blues. Of that, there's no question. It's been 25 years, award-winning ones, and that of scalding hot and tasteful blues from the Arkansas-born, Michigan-based singer, guitarist, bandleader, songwriter, and heir apparent to a lineage that includes personal influences and heroes such as B.B. King, Freddie King, Albert King, all of whom he's had the chance to meet and play with. McRae's 8 albums have blended a reverence for that tradition with his own soulful spin on the form, and those achievements have been noted with an Orville H. Gibson Male Blues Guitarist of the Year Award, as well as the Top Guitarist Prize in International Blues Matters 2014 Writers' Poll. But there's a part of McRae here that has rock and roll beat, too, and he's following that on his latest release, the Gibson Sessions, a 12-song set featuring some of the of his personal favorites by Lynyrd Skynyrd, Bob Seger, ZZ Top, Greg Allman, the Doobie Brothers, the Rolling Stones, Creedence Clearwater Revival, and others, with help from six-string brethren such as Allman Brothers Band co-founder Dickie Betts, a local favorite here, Derek Trucks, Los Lobos' David Hidalgo, and Jimmy Herring. The blues is my favorite for sure. I get more out of it, feeling wise, but I've always been a rock and roll fan, and I've always tried to write music that was rock and roll friendly, McRae explains. He adds, the Gibson Sessions is a much Larry McRae album as the 1990 or 91 debut Ambition, or any of the others that followed in its wake. I always try to move forward and remember where I came from, McRae says. This album is a way to do these things I love and maybe get them heard by people who like that music already, but do it in my own way so I can have some of my personality and self-identity with the music. Please welcome American blues guitarist, singer, and songwriter Larry McRae to Interviewing the Legends. Hello, Larry.
Hey, how we doing, Ray?
We're doing good, man. Are you in Michigan today?
Yes, sir, I am. I'm in Bay City, Michigan right now, hot and sweaty.
Yeah, here too, man. I'm in Florida. We're in the 90s.
Yeah, we're right about that too. It's just about 90 degrees here right now.
Yep, a lot of good music came from that area, though. That there in Detroit, that's for sure.
Oh, that's for sure. It, the name goes on and on.
Larry, we met, I don't know if you remember or not, I met you on stage here in Sarasota at the John Mayall 80th birthday concert.
I do remember.
You do remember that? You played right before John. It was a great show that night, an incredible night. I just want to read you, you know, I did a review, I covered the show. I just want to read you real quick what I said about you.
Okay.
Larry McRae and his incredible band spoke to Sarasota crowd brimming with blues enthusiasts. McRae has all the necessary ingredients needed to become a legendary performer. McRae's phenomenal soulful vocalizations were equally matched by his proficient guitar playing and songwriting expertise. McRae's set list included the discerning crowd pleasers Last Four Nickels, Don't Need No Woman, Smooth Sailing, Never Hurt So Bad, Sugar Coated Love, and Soul Shine. Broken Promises was my personal favorite. It had sort of a Van Morrison aura about it. That's what I wrote. and you were playing with John Mayall.
right. And that was such such an important thing, and you know, not because of John's contribution to the music and to know him and be around him a little bit. I had seen him for years and years performing, you know, out in the Roadhouse, and you know, it just was good to get a chance to get up close and personal with him.
Right. What was funny about that night, the promoter, Paul, I went up to him and I asked him for the set list for John Mayall, and he grabbed me, took me to John Mayall's dressing room, and threw me in with him. Which is pretty cool, though.
and the fact about it, like you said, John turned 80 that year.
I know.
And here it is 6 years later, and he's still releasing new music. So I think that's a testament to John's longevity also, and his will and desire to stay out there to work, you know?
Exactly. You know, he was setting up his own equipment that night.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, it's indicative of the curve of the business sometimes that, you know, sometimes everything swings to the favor of the artist, and then sometimes don't get anything at all swing to the favor of the artist, and they still have to find themselves doing all their own legwork. So it's just on the point of how things go, but it's not a testament to the quality of the artist or to the degree of his, it's not saying nothing about his music.
Right.
It's just that, you know, the business is that teaches, and you can make good decisions and bad decisions that really affect you a long ways down the line if you don't fall in the right spot.
Exactly. Yep. Being in the right place at the right time. And
right.
I was talking to a friend of yours. This is blues month for me. We had Shirley King and your friend Joe Louis Walker was on a few days ago.
Okay.
And Joe was funny. He's saying, from the outhouse to the penthouse.
From the outhouse to the White House.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
And have definitely, you know, been out there a long time, you know, and I'm sure he's had peaks and valleys in his career, but the thing about it is, if you have the determination and can stay healthy enough, you know, you can always rebound. It don't have to be your last statement, you know.
Right. Yeah, it's like being an athlete, pretty much, you know.
Right. Well, BB said it well, and Johnny Adams, and I don't know who wrote the song, but it's a famous song that there's always one more pass.
Exactly.
And as long as we got life and breath and health, there's always one more time. So, you know, the power of being able to regroup and reset is amazing.
It is amazing. I got to tell you, man, you have such a seasoned, legendary blues voice. I mean, to me, you know, it echoes Muddy Waters. You know what I mean? It's got
definitely one of my early influences. I love Muddy Waters.
Oh, man, you kind of sound like Muddy, you know? You really do.
Well, you know what? A lot of people, when they hear Muddy Waters sing, they think Muddy Waters.
Right.
But see, where I was raised and where I come from, Muddy Waters was a thing.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like an individual. Muddy drew from somewhere. You understand what I'm saying?
Sure.
So although other people maybe didn't get popular, then maybe Muddy's the one that got popular for that style of vocal. But that was a common thing among the people of that region that was raised up doing that thing.
Right. There are so many different regions of blues, you know, the Chicago blues, you got the Delta, you know, Mississippi,
mm-hmm.
you know, mm-hmm. it's so neat to hear all of them. And there's so many blues artists that have never been recognized, and especially women, you know, there's been a lot of great women blues artists too that played electric guitar.
Well, my sister was one of them that never got discovered.
Really?
Yeah, my sister Clara was an excellent guitarist and singer. She was more guitar player than anything.
Did she teach you how to play guitar?
Yes, she did.
Oh, wow. But what were some, what was this, like one of the first songs you learned with her?
Well, she started me out on Jimmy Reed.
Uh-huh.
You know, I learned how to play You Don't Have to Go Deep in Hiding, you know, that type of thing.
Right.
What we refer to now as a lump. If somebody tells you to play a lump blues, then they want you to lump, too long. That was the description, you know.
Right.
So I started out with Jimmy Reed. And was very listener friendly with a lot of the other Delta blues players, Muddy included. But you know, I listened to people like Mississippi Fred, Perry Lewis, Booker T. Lowry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, several. I tried to stay in touch with the roots aspect of the Lord Folsom was another.
Right.
And then after I got into all that stuff, she electrified me with Freddie King, Albert Collins, Albert King, B.B., T-Bone Walker. You know, Guitar Slim. So, I mean, it was always something new. And I was more into style and style diversity than I was, you know, just listening to a song or whatever. I like to try to study individual style and absorb some of that. So I studied B.B. King a lot. I studied Albert King and Freddie King and also Elvis Collins.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like my blues dictionary or my blues Bible for reference.
You know, what I admire about you too is that, you know, you play covers, but you do it in your own way. I mean, you turn any song that, you know, into your song, which is really great. I really admire that.
Well, you know, I think, example, like I said, I always refer back to those four, but those were the, outside of my sister, those were the, my main four influences. I mean, in the family, if you were going to play blues guitar, you had to play them four. If you didn't play them four, you weren't playing no blues, as far as the people were concerned.
Yep.
You know? And, with that being said, you know, Freddie, look how he, did his covers. He did, Ain't No Sunshine When She's Gone.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you didn't know any better, you would think
exactly.
Well, maybe that's pretty fault.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, every song that he did, he took it and made it his own. He did it in his own style.
Right.
With his own vocals, his style of guitar. You know, them kept that style. And I think that's what allowed and what taught the rest of us to follow that way, you know, what kind of gave us something to go for, something to shoot for, to try to follow in their footsteps, but yet you still have enough presence of mind to try to cut your own trail.
Well, you do the same thing. I mean, when you play Black Magic Woman, that's you. You know what I mean? I never heard it played that way before, and I love your version, man. It's incredible.
Thank you.
And
it stems from the same thing. Like I said, I know how Carlos did it. I know how Peter Green did it. So I know what my influences were. So I try to take just a little bit of there, a little Carlos, mm-hmm. a little Peter Green, and mix it in with my own intent to come up with my own thing, you know, own twist on it.
You did the same thing with Watchtower. And one song that blew me away, I was shocked you did this one, that nobody's going to do this cover, Stealing from Uriah Heep.
Well, you know, like I said, that was, we decided that it was time to do a cover record.
Right.
And, you know, that was always one of my favorite songs, you know, I felt that bluesy. So I just hope that my interpretations of these songs didn't upset the people who supported these artists originally, that it wasn't so far-fetched that they couldn't appreciate a little twist or a different version of the song.
Now,
because in my opinion, if you're going to try to duplicate what the original artist did,
right.
Well, how could you? It's only one Mona Lisa.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying?
Sure. So
it's only one original.
Right.
So there's no need for that no more. If you're going to do it, try to find yourself in it to give your own interpretation. Otherwise, you will always fall short of the mark.
Well, if you play it just like they did, you're a tribute band. That's all you are, you know.
And you never do it as good as the original.
Exactly.
You never do it that good as good as they did it in their way.
Yep.
But if you can find a way to say the same thing in your own interpretation, you might can find a little identity.
Well, you played the Gibson Sessions. I gave it a 5-star, man. If I could give it 6, I would. It's a great album, you know. And let me tell you, man, you play these tracks your way, and I love every one of them, you know. You know, one of my favorites that you did perfectly was Waiting for the Blues, the ZZ Top track.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Now, you know what, too, and I didn't make mention of that, but I was a bit ZZ Top fan as well. You know, I'm a big Billy Gibbons fan. Right. Billy's got great tones. He got great blues chops. And that was an influence for me because I was raised in Arkansas.
Right.
But then I come here to Michigan as a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
So that was taking a kid that had been exposed to only strictly mostly blues and soul music.
Mm-hmm.
And when I come here and got exposed to more diversity, I got exposed to rock and roll music.
Yep.
Well, if there was nobody listening to rock, but I could hear the blues and rock. And I'm like, okay, these guys are playing the blues too. But they're playing it with a different tone and they're playing faster. And it made me aware, you know, a different perspective. You know, Bill Gibbons Waiting on the Bus wasn't nothing but soul music to me.
Right.
And the only thing we did different, we took one change out. We omitted one change. And other than that, you know, tried to get it the same way, but put just a little bit of grease and soul on it.
Well, you put the authentic blues into it. That's what you did.
We tried to grease it up a little bit.
Oh, my God. I'll be honest with you. I like your version better than ZZ Top's, and I'm the ZZ Top fan.
Oh, man, don't say that.
I got to say that.
We don't want to make nobody mad out there. And I definitely wouldn't even put my lips on it. But I'm just, and like I said, my goal was to have people accept those and to give them a new take on maybe something that they already, you know they already love them songs. It's been proven. But hopefully it gave those songs a different life too, new life as well.
Oh, man, you classed it up a lot. The other one was Needle and the Spoon, man. The Skinner tune. That's mm-hmm. another one you made your own, and it's incredible. I love it.
Well, you know, the reason I picked those tunes because I felt that they were all very powerful.
Right.
In their originality. So, like I said, if you're going to try to pattern yourself after something, why not? It just was so easy to blues those songs up because they were already there.
Right.
It was rock tunes, but they already had the blues written all over them, so it was quite easy.
You know, it's kind of like, you know, when the Brits, when the blues went away and the Brits brought it all back, you know, guys like Mayall and Savoy Brown and, you know, and they had their own spin to it, you know.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, it's kind of like that. I want to mention some of the people that are on this album, too. Oh, my God, you know, I mean, number one, you know, Dickie Betts, he, you know, I just found out through his David Spiro, you know, his manager, that I think he's retired officially now.
He might be. I hate to even think of that, but
yeah.
You know, the road is a hard hungry. I mean, it's a hard master. And if you stay out there long enough, man, you sometimes touring takes so much out of your body. I don't know, you know, if you relate with it, but like sometimes when you go on a vacation and you be on the road for a few days, and then you have that last long ride home. And when you get home, you don't feel like doing nothing for 2 or 3 days.
Right.
Well, think about getting a dose of that punch drunk for 30 or 40 years on the road.
That's right.
You know, how you feel, how your body reacts, you know, to situations like that. And you throw a little thickness in there with that, and you really got a man.
I don't know how you do it.
Yeah, you know, so Dickie, it's got to be at least about 75 years old now,
yep.
76 years old.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of us run harder than others, you know, and it's just time takes its toll, and that's unfortunate that, you know, I'm sure he still got a lot to contribute musically, maybe, but, you know, I understand if he just don't feel like going out there facing the crowd anymore, man.
Yeah, Dickie's only about 15 minutes from me here. His home. And you know, his son is, you know, Dwayne is a really good guitar player. And now he's on the road.
Speaking of what,
yeah.
Well, you know, Dickie have always a guy, you know, making his own film and
right.
in the middle of controversy from time to time. But I found that he was one of the most easy and most pleasant people
mm-hmm.
I ever got a chance to work with. You know, I was afraid to meet Dickie when I first met Dickie and all my brothers. You know, because you hear so many stories and,
yep.
you know, we all have a tendency sometimes to judge people by their image of what you think.
Right.
Which really taught me a lesson not to presume or not to think, because that's a form of prejudice within itself. And even if it ain't nothing bad, if you don't think nothing bad or have bad intent, it's wrong to judge people
right.
or to presume what you don't know. And so after having been a person of my own, a victim of my own will of thinking, when I got a chance to know the man, I'm just so happy and lucky that I did get a chance to meet him and know him the way that I did.
Larry, here's a funny story. I took my daughter. Sometimes I take her to cover when I cover some shows, and there was a tribute concert, but a benefit for a little girl in Mayaca, Florida, which is close to me, but it's very, very, very southern, very southern. And Dickie was playing that benefit, and I swear to God, it felt like I was in the Civil War. And I'm from up north. I'm from D.C. and Baltimore, so I know what you're talking about. I know what you're talking about. I mean, they had Southern Comfort bottles and drinking, and you know, and my daughter was scared to death.
Well, it's all harmless and all in good fun. You know, you just got to know, you got to be able to read people, and I think that's a
exactly.
lesson in terms of what, you know, with all the crises and stuff in the world today.
Exactly,
we have to learn to be better communicators.
Right.
And we have to learn to allow the other person to express their opinion and not be offended by it, but if they try to come to an understanding.
Exactly.
Once they express that whatever it is, it could be good, bad, or indifferent. But if it's indifferent and they're willing to allow you to explain or help put light on the situation, we all can correct each other's problems.
True.
And misunderstandings and stuff like that. We just have to be willing to listen to each other.
Well, in the 60s, music is what brought us together, you know? But we don't have that luxury anymore like we used to, you know?
No, music has really
yep.
taken a change these days. But you got a few waterfalls out there that are still trying to preserve their form of the art as well, because it's still good, and I think it's still probably one of the most soothing forms of music, you know, emotionally soothing, you know, for different situations, you know?
Well, that's what I try to do, man. I've interviewed over like 2,000 artists, and I'm trying to preserve it. I want to promote, because they still have, you know, you guys still have things to say. You know, you're still putting out new albums. You know, mainstream radio is not going to play any of it. You know, they're too stuck on Taylor Swift. So that's what I do, man. Music has been my love since I was a kid, and you know, all kinds of music. Yeah.
And I tell you what, too, your efforts don't go unnoticed or unappreciated. I don't know if anybody ever tell you, but it's people such as yourself that is so instrumental in keeping this music alive, you know,
right.
that people need to every now and then stop and give you a pat on the back, too, and say, hey, thanks for doing what you do. Thanks for being who you are.
And, you know, that's all I need, because I don't make any money doing this. I just do it for the love of music, you know, and helping you guys.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. You know, it's so funny, though. Yeah, I'm just as bad as you are. Well, you understand people and the way they are and everything. But when I was in radio, you know, they did a placement. And this was in the 70s. And the first job that was available was in Mississippi. And I turned it down because, you know why. You know, I was always a long-haired guy, you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, I had white hoods in my mind.
And have a joke about
that. Isn't that terrible? That's terrible.
We can't help or we can't change what went on in the past.
Right.
Only thing we can do is look forward to the future.
Exactly.
But unfortunately, at the time, that was a legitimate concern. Wasn't it?
Well, they didn't like long-haired people, you know, so I didn't feel too comfortable there.
Right. Well, that just shows you where we are. And to testament that we have grown, you know, we have
yes.
grown as a nation.
Exactly.
We've gone a long way.
Exactly. You know, people are too sensitive today. You know, look at all the stuff that happened in the 60s and 70s. We made it. You know, we were all right. Everything was fine.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I don't know. It's a shame what's happening nowadays. And then we got this virus thing. It's been a rough year. It's been a rough year, man.
It's been a rough year, but like I said, we just can't give up. I'll never give up on the fact that there's still enough good people in the world that
I believe it too.
I think whatever's bad out there, I think that we got enough power and unity to overcome.
I agree with you.
And I believe that, you know, I gotta hold on to that, you know?
I agree with you 100%, man. Did you grow up on a farm?
I did.
What kind of farm did you guys have?
Well, it wasn't necessarily a farm. It was just rural living. We had our own livestock. We raised a couple cows.
Oh, cool.
Pigs, raised a lot of pigs.
Right.
And did a lot of farming in terms of agriculture. Raised a lot of peas. Back in the days, they called Hooper wheel peas, purple hull peas, brown peas, butter beans, green beans, sweet potatoes, Irish potatoes, corn, squash, cucumber. You name it. If it grew in the dirt, we planted it. You know, tomatoes. We grew up, and that was just for our personal use. We grew up on a big agricultural field where they raised tomatoes, cucumbers, and tomatoes and cucumbers. Mostly tomatoes and cucumbers.
What happened to the farm? Is the farm still there?
Yes. We moved. My family moved. I left Arkansas in 72.
Okay.
72. And, when we left, then that way of life was all done, you know, for my family. That's just the way everybody lived back then, you know, doing that, you know, 60s and early 70s. That's the way people survived.
Sure. My wife's family's from Kentucky, and they had farms, they had pigs, and they had all that. Yeah, I admire farmers a lot. I mean, that's
well, you know what? It's going to come back to that because there's so much going on in agriculture and so much industrial farming going on now. That,
yeah.
You know, I don't think the food is really healthy. You know, organic is the best way.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can come to growing your own, that's even better than that because you know what's going in your food there.
Yeah, that's a shame. It's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I've been a victim of, cancer and stuff like that before, you know, which is all they say. Everything to do with sickness starts from your gut.
Yep.
Healthy gut and then healthy blood after.
I agree. You know what I mean? I agree, man.
You
toured with the master of the Telecaster, Albert Collins, and that's really cool. What was Albert like?
Albert Collins is another. I went through a thing when I first got a chance to start being around popular artists. You know, people who were doing what I was aspiring to do.
Right.
I met a lot of them, not to call any name because I don't want to embarrass anybody. But you know, I met some of my heroes that weren't so friendly.
Right.
That weren't so accommodable and just, you know, kind of intimidating to be around. Albert Collins was the kind of guy that welcomed everybody and tried to make everybody feel good, make everybody feel right at home. Albert, his drink of preference was Bloody Mary. And he kept him a fifth of Absolute all the time in his mix and everything, but if you call him sitting by himself or out, you know, lounging by the pool, enjoying himself, the first word out of his mouth, get you some, son. Anybody who walked up, anybody came around, and that's the way he was all the time to be around.
Mm.
He wanted to make everybody comfortable. He wanted to make everybody feel good and just a clever, funny guy to be around.
His shows were like that. He played with the audience. He did.
Yeah.
He walked away from the stage. Even walked outside. I think once he went to visit a store, a candy store or something next door, while he was playing the guitar. I mean,
he ain't gonna tell you what you have to get with Albert, but it was all one thing for sure about him when he got to the stage. It was all high energy. It was high energy and none but business. You know.
Right.
Yeah.
Man, oh man.
You know, I got a chance to tour with him. I toured with him. on the Gary Moore tour. We supported Gary Moore.
Oh, wow.
But this Still Got the Blues tour in Europe.
Yep.
So it was almost 3 months long. And every night, Albert Collins was his walk-on guest. But Albert was traveling without his band, and he didn't really have anybody to be with, but he had his own dressing room and stuff like that. But shoot, Albert didn't want to be in that dressing room. Every night he'd be over with us in our dressing room, talking and laughing and having fun. Yeah, he didn't stay in that, he didn't stay in his room by himself. He wanted to be with the fellas, you know.
Sure. I don't blame him. You another guy you played with too is of course Warren Haynes. Warren's a good guy with government.
Yeah, great guy. And I come to find out, I met Warren in the late '80s, just about with the early '90s. I don't know, somewhere around close to 1990, '91, '89, somewhere through there. Anyhow, I hung out with him for a couple of weeks the first time on a writer session. And during that session, Warren came with four cassette tapes, full of music. And from then times up until now, I probably hear maybe a dozen songs or 15 songs off of them tapes that he had back in the early 90s that became releases later on for himself and the Allman Brothers.
Right.
And so the song Soul Shine was one of the songs that were
great
on
song.
Those cassette tapes back in then. So I listened to all the cassette tapes that he had at the time, which there was a lot of good stuff in there, but that was one that just kind of stuck right away.
Mm-hmm.
And so I asked him, I said, well, Warren, how come, you know, and when he came with the tape, they were fully produced. They sound like albums or releases already. It was no work necessary. I mean, he could have released them just as they were. And I just asked him, I said, well, why'd you never release these or whatever? He said, well, I don't know. I've been trying to get Greg to listen to that song, you know, talking about Soul Chat.
Right.
So he gave me permission to do it. I went on ahead and did it. About 3-4 years later, close to 5 years later, him and Alan Woody was on the bus, and they played the album version of the song Soul Chat.
Mm-hmm.
So from what the story he tell me, I guess Greg finally heard the song, and he come in and say, who is that? And he said, that's Larry McClain. And he said, oh yeah, blah, 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 blah. He said, I've been trying to get you that song for years. And he finally heard it and come out on the deliveries after that particular time. So that's how it come about to be an Allman Brothers song.
Mm.
And from after they released the song, you know, we had been doing the song already for 4 or 5 years. After they released it, every time we would do it, they say, were you doing an Allman Brothers song?
Right.
And I'm like, yes, we are. That's written by Warren Haynes, but we released it 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So it was kind of funny to see how it developed, but I tell you what, it really did pick up and become an anthem after they did it because they circulated to such a more larger fan base than what we had,
right,
you know?
Right.
And then it really became a welcome thing after it was popularized by the Allmans.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we did it, people would know the song and they really responded and it came to be one of our best songs to do live, you know?
Well, you've been recognized as a revered blues artist and you played with so many famous people, but one producer in particular, Mike Vernon, produced Delta Hurricane, right, one of your albums. And if people don't know who Mike Vernon is, man, he's produced the Blues Breakers, David Bowie, Savoy Brown, Fleetwood Mac, Eric Clapton. Yeah, you know, the list goes on and on. What was it like working with him?
I threw Jeff back in on the end.
Okay.
What was the question?
What was it like working with him?
Well, Mike, I never really worked with a so-called professional producer until I worked with Mike Brown, and he was the first one.
Uh-huh.
And what Mike taught me was the organization, what you need to have to be organized to complete a record project. I mean, you know, he showed me how to do all your checks, you know, you check all your rhythm section part first. You make sure that you got everything right in the rhythm section. Then you add your vocals, then you do up your leads, and then you go through and do your mixes and get them right. And as everything falls into place, he had a log that he checked everything. So he was very proficient at making sure that every issue had been addressed, you know, on the record project. And other than that, you know, we got this, a chance to have, quite a good time and a good rapport together.
Right.
Now, the person, Mike, was a little bit, stiff, you know, really stiff when he came in, and it was Big Dungeon, business and Big Dungeon. And before he left there, man, we had that show, the cat went like a chicken. He was having fun, you know, just weeding his stuff and hanging out with the guys, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's my thing. I mean, you know, I love to see people come together, and I definitely love to see when people enjoy and have a good time. That's my reward, you know, to see people enjoy and be happy.
You know, I knew you were something special when I saw you with John Mayall. And I remember John watching you from the wings. You know, and I stood with John watching you from the wings too, because it was a great night that night. You know, I was surprised on his 80th birthday. I was expecting maybe, you know, Clapton to show up or, you know.
Me too. I was hoping something like that would happen.
I mean, 80 was a big one, you know.
And one of the things that he has recorded is that his 70th for Luther Allison, Otis Rush.
Right.
Clapton, that's his 70th, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, so.
With Clapton.
I was hoping for a big turnout like that, but.
Yep.
Unfortunately, it didn't happen, huh?
It didn't happen. I mean, I was so fortunate. It was so fortunate to be able to cover that show here in my own backyard. You know, I was excited about that.
And I look forward to coming back there, man. I really have a good time in Sarasota, and I got some good friends there and everything, and I just hope that I get a chance to come back that way sometime soon. I hope so, man.
I
can get back to work.
We need to get music back on the road again. I mean, this is ridiculous, you know?
Yeah. We've been taking it easy since the end of February.
Yep. So what's going on? Are you going to come out with a new album? Are you working on anything?
I'm working on it right now.
Okay.
I got probably about 8 tunes ready to go that I feel really pretty good about, and the rest I want to allow for a chance to maybe take something from another writer or a good cover, if we come up with a good cover from. You know, I don't particularly care about being a writer for all the material. I wish I was that great of a writer where I could write all the songs.
Right.
But if not, my biggest concern is just having good material, strong material. So I definitely don't mind doing a cover, although that's not my goal, you know, to do covers, you know. But I'm saying, if we fall short, if we can't come up with something that we feel really strong about, then we'll resort to maybe that or taking material from other writers.
Well, a lot of legendary musicians only did covers, you know, and
right.
And you're good at it, man, because it sounds like your own music anyway. So it does.
Like I said, that's my intent. You know, we're doing covers. I hope it has a little bit of identity in there that to be identified with me as an artist, and not just doing a cover, but doing a decent version of a cover.
So what direction is this new album going to be? Is it strictly blues, a little rock and roll? What do you think?
Well, I'm up to the point now that I want to express a little bit different side. I mean, you know, I have a song right now called No More Crying and No More Pain.
Right.
And it's inspired by death in the family. You know, I lost a brother and a sister-in-law a couple of years ago.
Sorry to hear
that. Yeah, and so, you know, that song was inspired from that. And it says that, I'll give you a little couple of words. It says, no more crying. Hear me laughing every time it rains. No more crying. See me smiling every sunset. No more crying. Let me see. No more crying. Hear me laughing every time it rains. No more crying. See the smile in the sunset. No more crying. No more. No more. Talk about no more crying. No more pain. So, you know.
Love it.
It's all about, you know, that kind of, you know, no more crying, no more pain.
Awesome.
You know, smile loud when you walk into
sure.
the room.
Yep.
It's in the room with kids in your eyes.
Right, exactly.
I feel with sadness and feel with gloom. I don't want to see you cry.
That's beautiful.
You tell me that you love me. It's too soon for me to go, but I've waited much too long to see the Lord.
Mm.
I'm going where no more crying, no more pain.
That's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I hear, you know, I get a lot of artists that sing to me on the phone, and sometimes I have to cringe because they don't sound like they do in concert on the phone, but you sound just like you do.
Yeah, it ain't a lot of dress up to me. I'm just,
yep.
you know, country, but the whole country good, you know, country straightforward. And that's another thing, too. I have a couple of songs that have a really country
right.
playing to them.
Right.
But the country blues, it's not regular country. It's got a strong blues element to it, too.
Yep.
You know, Little Milton back in the day did a couple of, like, When You Get Behind Closed Doors. I don't know if you remember his version of that, but, you know, Bobby Bland did Today I Started Loving You Again.
Yep.
You know, so all through the past, there's always been blues artists that take on country songs and do them in their own way sometimes, you know?
That's right. I mean, I would love to hear a country version of you, of your song, man. It'd be incredible.
Well, it's a song that, I'm writing with a friend of mine
uh-huh.
about, this ghost down in New Orleans.
Really?
Called Blue Mary. It's a ghost that they said they see it in the, cemetery every now and then, you know, she make appearances and stuff, and so we're doing one called The Legend of Blue Mary.
Oh, cool.
And it's got a country twang to it.
Awesome. Is that going to be on the new album?
Oh, yeah. I guess they're going to use that one on the next project.
All right, well, the next project, man, we'll get you on the radio so we can talk about that one as well, because I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, I can't wait to get it to you. Ready? Tell me you said when you're in business, and you call me up, I'll play it for you.
I will. I love all your stuff, man. I really do. I want to ask you a question. This is a question I ask everybody. I get some very interesting answers, okay?
Okay.
If you had a Field of Dreams wish, like the movie, to perform, collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be?
Oh, Lord. It would definitely be Freddie King, Albert King, my heroes. You know, if I had it my way, if I could be on records with them four, with D.D., Albert and Freddie,
mm-hmm.
I'd have died and went to heaven. Second generation, Luther Allison, Bobby Parker.
Mm-hmm. Bobby Parker.
Oh yeah, I love me some Bobby Parker.
Yep.
Let me see. There's got to be somebody else, but them are tall on my list right there.
Mm-hmm.
Them are very high on my list. And as far as female, I would love to. It's a different genre, but I would love. I love Aretha Franklin. Aretha was one of my favorite all time vocalists.
Mm-hmm.
In the blues scene, I would love to have been on the record with Coco Taylor.
Okay.
I love Coco also.
Yeah. How about playing for Muddy?
For Muddy Waters?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Well, how could I not bring up Muddy Waters? Yeah. Oh, of course I would love him to do that. You know what? My biggest downfall with music is that it's so much great music that it's hard to choose.
I know.
I think, you know, I like so much stuff so well that it's hard. Well, you know, you think that you got your favorite, and then somebody says, well, what about him? And you're like, oh, what's shabby?
Yeah, it's true.
it goes from one to the next. You know, you just can't never get them all. It's never enough. It seems like it's always one more that we forgot about.
I complimented Shirley King because she did a couple of R&B tunes. And I love R&B growing up in Baltimore and in D.C. I grew up on R&B.
Right.
And she nailed it, man. It sounds just like a record from the 60s, like the early 60s. It was incredible.
Right.
Yeah.
Got another sweet soul right there, too. Shirley is a
she's so funny.
Wonderful lady and a wonderful performer. And I,
yep.
Been seeing her around. I used to see Shirley all the time when she lived in Chicago.
Uh-huh.
And I don't see her that much anymore these days.
Did you ever see her dancing, or is that like when you were before your time or anything?
Well, I think I caught the tail end of it. You know,
uh-huh.
I started going to Chicago in 86.
Right.
And so, you know, she was still performing quite regularly down on Halsted Street and other places in Chicago. So she was doing the thing, but I didn't necessarily see her dance performance. But she brought a little bit of that to the stage when she sang and played, you know, like on Halsted down at the Mayors and stuff like that.
Yeah, she was in a movie, and I looked it up while we were talking on the phone, and she started cracking up. She said, you looking at me when I was a dancer while we're talking on the phone? I said, yeah, I want to see what you look like.
What was the name of the movie?
That's right. It's kind of like a B-type movie. I forgot the name of it. I can email you the link to the movie, but I forgot.
Okay.
Yeah, I forgot about it. But she's got a little part in that movie. I think she's dancing in it.
Right.
Yeah, I think she's a stripper or something like that. You know, and I think she was embarrassed to tell her dad, but her dad says, "I've never been in a movie. You should be very proud of that."
He was something else, one of the old BB man. He's a great guy.
Oh my goodness! You know, she mentioned that he made the blues fun. You know, he was on Sesame Street. He did a lot of TV shows. You know, so yeah, that's why he had such a great following. You know, because he was a fun guy.
Right. He definitely was.
Yep. Larry, you got anything else you want to promote or anything like that?
Well, just the fact that, like I said, we're looking forward to trying to do a new release. That's
right.
What's on my mind hot and heavy right now. And just praying for longevity, man. Praying for good health.
Yep.
And stuff like that, you know, to be able to stay out here a while longer.
Amen to that, man. I want to mention, is your sister still around, the one that plays guitar?
No, Clara passed in the year 2000.
I'm sorry.
18 years older than me, but she still went way too young, you know? But
I was gonna promote her, you know, put something on YouTube or something about her.
Right. Yeah. You know what? I wish I could. I really wish I could.
She doesn't have anything out there, huh? There's no music of hers out there?
No, she has no releases, but her and Michael Burke's father used to have a band together back in the day, you know, when we were still in Arkansas and stuff.
Oh, wow.
And Mike lived in Camden, and I lived just down the road in Magnolia.
Right.
So, you know, back in them days, you didn't want a whole lot of musicians, so all musicians knew each other.
Yeah.
So, like I said, Michael father played bass, my sister played guitar, Edie Mullins on keyboard, and Bobby Joe Hendricks on drums.
Right.
And that was Clara and the Rockets.
Did you know any of the cats from Black Oak, Arkansas?
Black Oak, Arkansas?
Yeah. You know Jim Dandy?
I didn't know them personally, but I got a chance to meet Sean Lane in the later years in Memphis, you know, in the 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, that was just a freak of nature right there.
I had Jim Dandy on the show a couple of times. He's actually a very good conversationalist. He loves to talk.
I can only imagine. He was a pretty candid character back in the day, you know?
And my favorite baseball player of all time is from Little Rock, Brooks Robinson.
Your favorite what? Guitar player?
No, my favorite baseball player is from Little Rock.
Oh, Brooks was from Little Rock?
Brooks Robinson.
I didn't know that. The same thing from Hall of Fame.
That's right. He's from Little Rock.
I didn't know he was from Arkansas.
Yeah, he's from Little Rock. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, good guy, too. I met him a couple of times. I actually played baseball with him. I did a fantasy camp with the Orioles, and yeah, he played third base. So,
is Bruce still living?
He is. He's like 85 or something like that now. But the other guy I like was Frank Robinson. You know, they were both on the same team, and Frank just passed away not long ago.
A couple of years ago, I remember when he passed.
Yeah, he was another hero of mine, Frank and Brooks.
Yep. Old Frank Robinson had a big bat.
Ah, he was incredible. When I played Little League, I modeled myself after Frank Robinson, the way he stood.
Willie Mays was my first hero.
Oh, man, he was incredible. Willie Mays.
Willie Mays and Bobby Boy.
Bobby, yep. Hank Aaron.
You know, Willie McCovey, you know, when he left New York and moved to the Frisco area, I converted over to a Frisco fan.
Yep.
I followed him right on out there.
Another guy, you know, I admire Hank Aaron a lot because, you know, he didn't do steroids.
Right.
And Griffey Jr., he's another guy I love because he didn't use steroids either.
Right.
You know?
Griffey Jr., he was another good one.
He was a good one. Yeah. Larry, thank you, man, for being on the show today. I really appreciate it. You know, I identify with you because we're about the same age. I was born in 59, and I think you were 60, right? 1960?
Yep, I had a birthday in April. I turned 60 in April.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
We would have been in the same high school together.
What month is your birthday, Rick?
January.
Okay, so you just had a birthday in January.
Yeah, I turned 61.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, I'm hoping to follow in your footsteps.
Well, Larry, we love you, man. You're great. One of my favorite performers, and I look forward to the new album. We'll get you back on again once that thing is coming out, all right?
Brother, I can't thank you enough. God bless you.
You too.
And keep on doing what you're doing. And like I said, I can't say thanks enough, man. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Larry. Hope to see you in Florida. And if you do come back to Florida, I'll make sure we hook up, all right?
I'll be sure to get a hold of you.
Okay, Larry. Thank you so much, man.
All right, brother. You take care, Ray.
You too. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
Make a point to see blues sensation Larry McCrae as he celebrates his new release of the Gibson Sessions, a collection of classic songs, will rock you to the core. The inclusion of guitar virtuosos Dickie Betts, Derek Trucks, David Hidalgo, and Jimmy Herring makes this release a very special record. The vibe that's been created makes the blues compilation one of the best you could find in any corner of the world. Don't miss the Larry McCrae tour. When they're available, when they're coming out after this virus is gone, when he comes to perform at a venue near you. You'll have a night to remember. Believe me, when I saw Larry with John Mayall, it was a fantastic experience. To order the Gibson Sessions, you can order or send an email to paulkoch, K-O-C-H, 59@gmail.com. Once again, that's Paul. Paul B. Koch, K-O-C-H, 59@gmail.com. For more information about Larry McCrae, visit www.larrymccrae.net. And he's on Facebook at www.facebook.com/LarryMcCraeOfficial. Very special thanks to Magnolia Entertainment and Paul Koch for arranging this interview with Larry McCrae and the dynamic duo of Doug and Don Newsom of BBS Radio for making the magic happen for each and every broadcast of Interviewing the Legends. If you have comments or suggestions for the show, you can contact me at interviewingthelegends@gmail.com. And please subscribe to my YouTube channel, Interviewing the Legends with Ray Shasho, for the very latest interviews. It's real news. My new book is finally out, entitled The Rockstar Chronicles Series 1. Chronicles truths, confessions, and wisdom from the music legends that set us free. Order yours today on hardcover or ebook at bookbaby.com. Featuring over 45 intimate conversations with some of the rock legends, greatest rock legends the world will ever know. God bless you. Stay safe. Take care. Be healthy. And have a great week. Bye-bye now.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to Interviewing the Legends. Brought to you by The Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com. Specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Tune in to Interviewing the Legends every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time on BBS Radio. Station 1.